You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
I think what you're trying to ask is, why am I so insistent upon giving out to them that blackness, that black power, that black pushing them to identify with black culture? I think that's what you're asking. It's, I have no choice over it. In the first place, to me, we are the most beautiful creatures in the whole world, black people. I mean, and I mean that in every sense, outside and inside. And to me, we have a culture that is surpassed by no other civilization, but we don't know anything about it. So again, I think I've said this before in this same interview, I think at some time before, my job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them, and I will do it by whatever means necessary.
I am your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Alisa Word, and welcome to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. We are the return of intelligent radio as we ensure the free flow of opinions and push the envelope on the questions America's afraid to ask in the mainstream media. Good morning, Alisa. How are you doing, Queen?
I'm great, Montoya. Glad to be back with everybody. Excited for the show today.
No, absolutely. We've got our intellectual outcast out there listening. We do have a special guest on with us this morning, Phyla McMillan Antoine. Thank you, Queen, for being with us. First time guest. I've been following you for a long time on Instagram and love your work. I will say you are perfect for today's discussion question. Before we let the cat out the bag on the discussion question, if you will, say hello to the Alisa, if you will, to the intellectual outcast, and give a little bit of your background as it relates to this morning's discussion question. Thank you for being with us, Queen.
Absolutely, Montoya. Thank you for having me. Hey, Alisa, great to be here with you. My name is Phyla Antoine. I am an award-winning life and relationship coach, and I specialize in trauma-informed relationship bonding, trauma resolution, and healthy relationships, particularly with accomplished and successful black women, because I believe that the way that you do relationships becomes the way that you do life. And so if we learn how to have healthy relationships, everything else in our life will follow.
No, I love it. I love it. And so for regular listeners, y'all know I keep a short group of queens of intellect, which that's Alisa Word, one of my co-hosts holding me down as one of the queens of intellect. And typically when I figure out who I'm bringing on, it's because they got a little background as well. So if you will, Alisa, you actually understand today's question as well. So if you will, let them know about yourself as well before we get this morning's discussion started.
Absolutely. So I am a certified emotional intelligence coach practitioner as well as a certified trauma support specialist. So this is an area that I'm loving, knowing that I'm on the show for this today. And I also use some of that to do some of my work with diversity, equity, inclusion, because when you think about trauma, it's pervasive. It's a lot of things, including racial trauma and all those things we bring into relationships and conversations and daily living. So I'm excited about this conversation. Phyla, it's great to meet you. Looking forward to all of your contribution and learning from you today.
Love it.
Likewise.
So, Alisa, absolutely. And so we'll start the way we always start. So Alisa, you've done this before. Phyla, you'll be following suit, but pretty simple way we always start the show, which is Alisa, when you first heard the question worded this particular way, and this morning's discussion question is, why am I attracted to trauma relationships? Why am I attracted to trauma relationships? If you're a first-time listener, again, I do go by the name Black Socrates. So we take the Socratic method. We try to ask questions for our show titles, if you will, and see if we can ask enough questions and get to the right answers. But to get this thing started, Lisa, when you first heard the question worded that particular way, just give me your initial thought, not the second or third thought, but just the first thing that popped in your head when I asked you to be on this particular show with this question.
Well, besides being excited, so the first thing I thought about was adverse childhood experiences and how they impact us, and we carry the burden of that throughout life. That literally popped into my head.
Nah, I love it. I love it. And so, Fala, that's how we like to start, just kind of get that first initial thought. For you, it was a little different in the sense that I reached out and gave you, and I will, you know, give a little background just because you can kind of take it where you want to go. But I gave you several topics, and you was like, oh, I love these topics, and you leaned into this one. And so instead of necessarily your initial thought, how about you give your thought behind leaning into this particular question, saying, you know, of the five you gave me, Montoya, I'm leaning towards this one. So if you can kind of give me a little insight to why you chose this one versus some of the others.
Absolutely. So all of the topics you presented were really insightful and would have led us to great conversations. This one in particular stood out to me and excited me a bit because there are so many components connected to the idea of trauma and trauma bonding and trauma-informed relationships, particularly with the group of women that I work with who are women who are over 30, who are looking for healthy relationships and who have these emotional barriers and blocks that they're not aware of that come from, like Alyssa said, childhood trauma and that are exacerbated throughout levels of intimate trauma throughout their development as women. So there are so many things that we can touch on in this space, and there are so many ways for us to point to personal healing and reconciliation and resolution by focusing on this topic. And that was why I kind of leaned in and was like, I think I'm drawn to this over here.
Nah, I love it. Love the insight. You're right. A great, amazing opportunity for anyone listening to kind of figure this out. And from the standpoint, the thing that I love the most about what was said so far was just the idea of being unaware of it from a certain standpoint. And so, yeah, and as Lisa said, and you said as well, Fala, the childhood stuff can be an issue, and it's not always childhood stuff. It could be things that happen as adult, right, that stay with us as well. But the awareness is sometimes hard to see, and you quite often end up clearly, if you end up in one of the situations where you're like, man, I'm in a relationship, and this person seem to have a lot of trauma, I've been here before, and you, in a sense, possibly see that repeated cycle, and it's easier to see in others, not realizing, hey, what may be in your own personality that may have you, in a sense, drawn to this situation, or if you're one of those people that, in a sense, find yourself wanting to save someone, if you will, and end up in intimate relationships, there's definitely something to dig into, and again, that unawareness is what I think makes this show incredibly viable for anybody tuned in trying to figure that out. And as y'all hear, I have amazing experts that are in this area. Well, as a matter of fact, we got a couple of minutes before the break. I'll let you kind of expound on, in a sense, the topic today. And as you said, your work to a degree, if you just kind of give us a couple of minutes, just thoughts about that unawareness, and then we'll go to a break in about a minute and a half. So just keep it kind of brief.
Sure. So it really is about what has been normalized for us in our lives and what we normalize, right? And when it comes to the Black community, we have come from a normalized legacy of trauma, of tragedy, of oppression. And so we have this unawareness, right, this unconscious state of living where trauma is just a normal part of our day-to-day activities. And so when something has become normal to you, you don't recognize that it could be toxic. You don't recognize that it's abusive, and you don't recognize the dysfunction. I always say we learn to function within the dysfunction of our lives, and then when healthy things and healthy habits come in, we tend to repel them because it's so unfamiliar. And so it really is about growing up as Black people in a world that is not always kind to us, getting into relationships where we live out our trauma and we re-traumatize each other and ourselves. And it's not until you really step up that trauma-informed perspective and make a conscious decision to create something else that you recognize the capacity you have for healed relationships and that you're really able to see how much trauma and how much toxicity we've been living with. So it's about what you choose to normalize in your life and about the habits that have been passed down to you from generation to generation as well. So much
wow.
of your trauma is not really your own.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I love it. I love that explanation. We're going to go to a quick break. You've been on this radio thing before. You actually timed that out. Perfect. We're up against the break. We'll be right back listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Shout out to Kazimde over at Black Dot Culture Center and Bookstore. Thanks for carrying the Education of the Negro, Necessary Conversations on Race, Sex, and Culture. That's my new book. If you enjoy conversations like we have here every Saturday on the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, be sure to pick up my book so you and your family can engage in authentic dialogue. They can learn to navigate the African-American experience. Also, while you're at Black Dot, make sure you grab a cup of Ethiopian coffee and my favorite, the smoked salmon croissant. Visit Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore at 6984 Main Street, Lathonia, Georgia, 30058. Tell them Mental Dialogue sent you.
Rain, rain, go away. Come again another day. Rain, rain, go away. Come again another day. It always seems to rain when you're near. And I don't mean like in a good way, but more like hurricanes and tornadoes. The lightning is blinding and I can't seem to find my way to the disaster and destruction you left on my heart. Search and rescue is underway. Could have swore I had a hold on my soul. Don't know how it got away. Or how I missed the dark clouds hovering over your head. You know, the sad stories that everyone's left you for dead. Wanted to bring sunshine to your dark days. Give you power through my sun rays. But the waters got way too deep, almost drowned me. A state of emergency, shit got heavy. A disaster like Katrina, you broke the levees. Left me desolate and abandoned, screaming for help to anyone who could hear me cry. Or anyone who would listen to the moaning and the aching of my soul. Your heart is cold. Unhealed trauma from your past, rebirthing itself over and over again.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I am your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Alisa Word. This morning's discussion question, why am I attracted to trauma relationships? Our special guest is Fala Antwine. As we hear a beautiful short poem from one of our other Queens of Intellect members, Soul Scribe, a poem she entitled Trauma. And I chose that poem to kind of lead off and jump into this discussion because as I listen to those words, and Alisa, I'm going to kind of jump to you real quick. As I listen to those words, it sounds like a familiar story for relationships, in a sense, gone bad. So, again, I love the poem, but she's highlighting that, in a sense, the childhood trauma, she concludes, end up being the issue, if you will. And I also hear her perspective of how she may have been traumatized with it, relationship too. So to Fala's point prior to the break, it kind of goes both ways if we, in a sense, come into it, you know, if you will, but that's what I hear. I just want to hear your reaction to that short and beautiful poem.
Absolutely, Montoya. So, you know, I'm all about reading, you know, books by us, our folks, whatever, but there are certainly lots of pieces from other people that we gain perspective and information from. And there's a book called It Didn't Start With You, and I think the author is Mark Wolin. I've read it a couple of times, and it talks about this inherited family trauma and how this thing actually shapes who we are and, you know, and how we respond, how we carry this trauma even in our body. And even, you know, if the trauma that we've experienced is something that we experience in our adulthood, from our world experience and those sorts of things, how we can carry that with us. And even generationally, we pass some of those things down because it doesn't change the shape of the DNA, but it does impact the way that it even interacts with how our cognitive thinking is. So it's so important for us to really understand that. And when I was hearing Sala talk, that was the thing that came to my mind first, right, was we have to understand that this thing is so much bigger than what we don't see and what we do see. And also remembering that, you know, there's a saying, fish don't talk about water, that we use in my world. And in that, there was a commencement speech, I'll say this real quick, years and years ago, and two fish were asked, like, you know, how's the water? And the one fish said, well, what the hell is water, right? So mm-hmm. The point of that was we don't even know what's surrounding us. So how do we deal with that if we don't know that it's there? But we've got to understand it's often bigger than us, and it's often generational. And when we start to allow ourselves the permission to see the truth about that is when we can start this process.
No, it absolutely makes sense. Fala, anything you recall from the poem that stood out to you that you would like to react to, if you don't mind?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to give kudos to Alyssa for her point of view, because it really is about us as a culture, as a nation, as a generation, as a people. It's so much bigger than you as an individual. And in listening, what actually came up for me also is the concept of epigenetics, which is what I believe Alyssa is touching on and talking about, right? So yes. There's a theory that trauma is passed down to and by at least three generations, especially with women, because when a woman is conceived, she's in her mother's womb with the eggs that she will conceive if she decides to have children as well. And so hearing the poem and hearing the voice of that beautiful woman makes me think of the trauma that Black women inherit before we have even come into the world. And so before we even get to experience life, experience ourselves, we are in connection and in relationship with trauma itself. And that's why it's so familiar to us when we are partnering, when we are connecting. And the thing about trauma, especially in relationships, is that it often feels good because there's this constant emotional roller coaster you're on. Boring relationships don't give you the dopamine hits that traumatic relationships do. And so we become accustomed to the addiction of trauma in our relationships that is such a challenge to get out. And hearing the poem, I sensed a level of sadness in the voice of the orator that just kind of reminded me of the cycle of trauma that we have experienced as women, as Black people, and just as a community. And so breaking the generational pathologies is really important, and having these types of conversations is what leads to that. So I'm just really grateful to be here.
No, we are glad to have you, because I also peaked the sadness, right, within the deliverance of that poem. And Fala Soul Scribe, she's an amazing poet. She has books and audio books out as well. But I'll highlight in the sadness, and it was the ending, like, the, in a sense, the, it's almost like the childhood traumas reared themselves. So she was saddened to also, she highlighted in the poem before ending with that, hey, here's the pain that you've caused me. And then she kind of concluded, hey, there was these childhood traumas that reared themselves to unfortunately add to, you know, some aspects of her own pain. The idea mm-hmm. within this conversation, and I'll go right back to you, Fala. We got a caller that wants to jump in as well, but I'll go right back to you on this. The idea within that conversation, as I'm listening, again, thinking of her own trauma that was causing that relationship. Now, after the fact, there has to be a look to figure out, why did I even go this far for that to happen, right? Like, how did I enter that situation for it to end up being someone who's, if you will, trauma reared itself is there something I can see prior? I don't know if there's an answer to it, but for anyone out there consistently attracting the same situation, the look within becomes difficult, if you will. So that's I agree with that sadness. But if you will, Father, kind of point out
mm-hmm.
how that process begins, where you keep seeing this repetitive situation in your own life with your mates, and mm-hmm. how it becomes difficult to say, okay, what am I doing to be drawn to these type of mates? And I'm not saying that's the issue, but that's part of it.
No, absolutely, I understand. And this is not about judging folks'
right.
choices or actions or, right, making anyone wrong in what they do or blaming
right.
anyone. It's simply about accountability so that we get to recognize the roles we're playing in our own lives and make empowered choices to create the life, the lifestyle, the emotional experiences that we actually want, and not being a victim to our own choices. And really, one of the things when I'm working with clients that I really simply tell them is that nothing comes into your life that you didn't call. If it's here, you called it in. And if you've called it in, it is because your higher self, your sacred self, wants you to heal that part of you, wants you to heal that area of you. And so it's important to recognize that you get to take an empowered stance in your life, even if you've experienced trauma or dysfunction, because it is always an opportunity for you to resolve, for you to heal, and for you to become aware. Like we said earlier, we are unconsciously going through life. And when we have these types of experiences that bring up the childhood trauma or that trigger these negative emotions, it is your body, it is your mind saying to you, this needs to be resolved. There's something still here that we haven't dealt with. And so I think when recognizing first that whatever is in your life, you have called in some way, and that if it is in your life, it gives you an opportunity to become more self-aware and make more empowered choices, and then taking that perspective and moving forward instead of feeling like a victim and feeling like you don't have any choice in the matter of what happens in your life, because you absolutely do. And you get to curate the type of life and lifestyle and relationships that you want, as long as you are holding yourself accountable to making conscious choices once you recognize that there's something that needs to change.
No, I love just you use the word opportunity, because that's absolutely what it is. And just to, again, to stay on the lines of this conversation is about no judgment whatsoever. It's about learning ourselves, like you said, to bring in and have the lives that we want, if you will. And so understand it doesn't change or mean that other person, in a sense, didn't do what you said they did. They absolutely could have, and it could be also induced by their own issues. Now, all of that can be absolutely true, but if you look at it as an opportunity, what can I learn to ensure a better situation for myself? That is definitely where you want to be, versus, as you said, remaining from a standpoint of just within the hurt and never recognizing it. Let's go to the caller. Area code 302. Well, this is actually Elisa getting back in. I guess she got dropped off. Okay, got you. All right, Elisa, I just realized that was you that got dropped off. All right, go ahead, Queen. I think you caught most of what we're talking about. Just kind of jump in where you fit in. Go ahead, Queen.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think this conversation, I mean, it's just, you know, I'm sitting over here and I'm kind of like almost like at a poetry reading right now as I'm listening to her talk, and the fingers are just snapping, right, the whole time as this conversation moves on. And I love one of the points that she mentioned about you calling this, right, about you calling this in, about you bringing this in. And, you know, one of the things we talk about in my work is emotional unavailability, right? So a lot of women will complain about, you know, meeting a man who's not emotionally available. But if this is what you've been used to, if this is what you've known, if this is the water that you've been surrounded with somewhere in your life, then this is also what you're continuing to call in. And I can, from a personal perspective, even speak to that in, you know, a book that I wrote about, you know, Get Right for Love. It's named my book. And it talks about, you know, getting yourself together, understanding the things about you, because to both of your points, no one is ever going to negate that some of these things have happened to you at the hands of a person that you've been in relationship with, whether it's an intimate romantic relationship or family relationship or whatever that may be. But when do you decide that you want to choose, as Solomon mentioned, that opportunity to say, this is when something changes in and for me? So I focus on me, because if I focus on me, then all those external things will shift and change because I shift and change.
Now, it makes
sense.
But, Father, let's be honest. This shit ain't easy. Like, let's call it what it is. Because I have one of my former queens of intellect. She always, she kind of, in a sense, hates how, as a culture, we kind of lean on, we attract who we are. And it's not, and like, you're right, but I also understand her perspective from the standpoint of, you know, by being in the social media age, and now that we have, if you will, the one thing that social media does help with, if you will, is we've started to get cooler with the words that are associated with getting therapy, and we will acknowledge on many of your conversations that, if you will, that therapy is needed for our community in a lot of areas. And I agree with you, as you said earlier, when it comes to our inner relationships, if we could get that fixed, we can do a whole lot in a lot of other areas, if you will. And so, you know, and to a degree, there's areas of our community that's struggling with this. That's why we have to have these conversations. But back to her point, in that disliking who you attract who you are, what happens with therapy and buzzwords that come out of psychology, if you will, on social media, we tend to overuse them, tend to misunderstand exactly what a word means from a psychological standpoint. So I feel her on the sense of you attract who you are. And for a lot of people, it feels like, and we've already said this, but I just want to get down, kind of get down in on this point. It's almost like you're disregarding that some people are just out here messed up and really disrupting people's lives, sometimes intentionally and in some cases unintentionally. So it's kind of like it's a cop out to kind of just say it's all on you is the perspective. And I feel it to a degree, if you can just kind of weave through what I feel like I hear her saying. I wish she was here to speak for herself, but I'm just trying to bring it to the table because I hear that aspect as well. And I think there's some validity to what she's saying as well, in my opinion. But go ahead, Father.
I completely understand that perspective, right? And I encounter this perspective in my work with many of my clients and with many of the environments I go into. So the problem with these buzzwords that folks are getting from social media and the internet is that it minimizes the importance of the conversation, first and foremost, I believe. I would rather you tell me exactly what you're feeling from a personal perspective than to lean on these kind of, you know, cultural sayings or things, because that doesn't really give the full scope of what's happening. And the idea of telling folks you're responsible for what's happening in your life also triggers them emotionally. We're not used to being held accountable. We live in a society of blaming others. This is how I get to live my life. This is how I continue going to the job that I hate. This is how I stay in the marriage where I'm unsatisfied. This is how I deal with my children who I don't really like and they don't really like me. We never take accountability. So when someone is emotionally triggered by anything that's said or done around them, again, it's an opportunity to check in. Why does this bother me? Why does this make me feel uncomfortable? Like Alyssa and I are saying, it's not about the other people as much as it is about you. And so every opportunity of emotional introspection should lead you back to a place of self-awareness. In particular with this saying, though, when we're saying you attract what you are, we first get to realize that people are complex and we're layered. So there are different versions of you. You may attract a past version of you in a partner. You may attract a future version of you. You may attract the current version of you. simply based on the energetic space that you are occupying at that time. And so while you attract who you are in one area or another, you do not have to choose those people if that's not who you want to be aligned with. So there's accountability in there in recognizing I've drawn this energy and this person in, but then again, there's also conscious awareness necessary to say, I may recognize some of my patterns and behaviors in this individual, but I don't choose this. So knowing that what has come to you has been called by you also allows you to then make conscious choices about whether or not you want it to stay. So to kind of summarize that, I think.
Yeah, let me do this. Let me do this for you. Let me do this.
Yes.
Let me, because I got to hit this break, so I'll let you kind of come out of the break with that summary, because I love everything you said, and I feel like we, for anybody that struggled, like, you know, like my Queen of Intellect member with that comment, I think you just walked us through the nuance, right? I can attract it, but I don't have to choose it. I love that language, because I didn't want to just leave it there and people, in a sense, feel empty, if you will, because we didn't walk through what that feels like, or they may be triggered by us saying, oh, it's you, it's what you choose, it's your opportunity. So I feel like we've done good with that, but we'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
What happens when your customers call your business and you're too busy to answer or call them back in a timely manner? You lose that business. Shockingly, 61% of inbound calls go unanswered. But fear not, tchmedia.ai is here to change the game. We specialize in capturing, nurturing, and converting your prospects into loyal customers. With our state-of-the-art communication solutions, no interaction will be left behind. When you miss a call, we've got you covered with automatic, engaging texts that keep your prospects connected and eager to choose you over your competitors. Don't let potential customers slip away. Make the smart choice with tchmedia.ai and skyrocket your conversions today. tchmedia.ai is here to change the game.
I'm about to tell you how your paternal trauma is showing up in your relationships, and how it's hurting you and keeping you from having the healthy, happy, passionate love that you desire and deserve. By the way, I'm Phyla, a self-care and relationship coach for ambitious Black women. I specialize in coaching Black and brown women on how to create sacred self-care plans and healthy relationships. If you're an ambitious Black woman who wants to prioritize yourself, take great care of yourself, and have healthy relationships, then you need to be following me. If you are a woman who experienced abandonment, absenteeism, neglect, or abuse at the hands of a father, then that puts you at risk for recreating the trauma that you experienced with your father in your relationships. Even if you had a father who was physically present but emotionally absent, that creates a level of trauma as well that can later show up in your relationships. Here are three of the ways that that paternal trauma is showing up in your current or in your past relationships. So the first thing is that you will seek the same abuse that you experienced with your father, whether it was dysfunctional, absenteeism, neglect, abandonment, or abuse. You're subconsciously wired to want to recreate the things that are familiar to you and that you have already experienced. And so you will unconsciously seek out and choose partners who will contribute to the feelings of unworthiness that you have connected to the ways that you experienced that trauma from your father. The second thing is that it will create this extreme behavioral pattern. Either you're going to be super soft and passive and subordinate to men in your life because of a fear of not being chosen, or you're going to be super aggressive and masculine and rigid because of a fear of being hurt again. And that creates a conflict because you battle your partner in his masculinity while in the relationship. And then the third way that it damages your adult relationships is that it inhibits genuine connection. So you're not able to genuinely connect with the person when you are operating from trauma because you're seeing them and seeing the relationship itself from a trauma-informed perspective. That means you're seeing your father in that partner and you're attracted to him because of that reminder. If you need more help with this, book a call with me at the link in my bio.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Alisa Word. This morning's discussion question, why am I attracted to trauma relationships? As you just heard a cut from our current special guest, Fala Antoine, emotional wellness coach. Fala, you were saying some things. We got a caller that wants to jump in as well, but you were saying some things prior to the break, and now, in a sense, surprise you with your own words, really breaking down these different aspects of how that childhood trauma, if you will, can affect relationships. And for any men out there listening, obviously she focuses, if you will, on Black women, but a lot of that same stuff applies, whether from your mother or father, and those things can show up in our relationships as well. But go ahead, if you will, Fala.
Absolutely. I was like, hey, I know that voice. But the information that I give is useful for men and women. I just choose to focus on women. But I come from the perspective of this healing is for everyone. But before the break, I just wanted to kind of summarize when we were talking about that you attract what you are. Just simply taking the things that you hear on the internet and social media with a grain of salt, challenging yourself to go deeper into your own feelings and reminding yourself that you get to choose what stays in your life.
I love it. All right, we got Ashley calling here out of Atlanta, if you will, one of my Queen's Intellect members. How you doing, Queen? Thank you for calling in this morning. Give us your 3 cents or ask any questions that you want to ask of both of our esteemed guests. But thank you for getting on this morning. Go ahead, Queen.
Yeah, good morning. I am enjoying the conversation. I think the only thing that I wanted to add in is that, and I don't know if it was brought up, so I apologize if it was, but like this is an ongoing thing, right? We are in a relationship with ourselves for the rest of our lives. So it's not like you experience trauma and you do the work one time or two times and that's it. I think that there is a misconception as we are delving further into emotional awareness and intelligence that you do the work one time and that's it. And like you're not going to experience it again in relationships. You're not going to have these problems again. And that's just not the case, right? I think one of the psychologists that I listened to talked about triggers and trauma in the sense of like it holds, imagine it having an electrical charge. And like as you do the work, that electric charge to those triggers and those traumas and these that you off, when you do the work, it doesn't have as much power. It doesn't mean that you won't be triggered. It doesn't mean that you won't have other traumatic experiences, but it is an ongoing work that we have to do. And if we're really intentional, it's something that we're doing every day and having that curiosity, as the speaker said, around what's going on. Why are we feeling that way? And I genuinely think that one of the most powerful questions we can ask ourselves is why? Whatever we're thinking, why? Like, why am I having that thought? Why am I feeling that way? Or even the question around, when was the first time I recall having this experience, so that we can do the work of diving in and figuring out who we are and knowing that it's a lifelong journey. It's not something that will happen overnight. And even in great relationships with each other, you might still be traumatized. You will definitely still be triggered. And again, it is an opportunity for us to learn more about ourselves and have that curiosity. So that was all that I wanted to add.
Now, that's a beautiful add. Thank you for your 3 cents this morning. Let me say this real quick, just in listening to you, when you brought up the analogy of the, I guess we say being electrocuted, or what was the analogy you said?
Electrical charge.
Yeah, electrical charge. That's what I was looking at. Yeah. So when you were thinking, this is where I thought you were going to go, and I'll be curious to hear what Alisa or Fala has to say about this. But where I thought you were going to go, and the example was perfect, but what I thought was when you said when you do the work, I actually thought the next thing you were going to say was when you're doing the work, you're actually volunteering to have the triggers. Because when you do the work, the triggers show up while doing the work. So because of that, a lot of us will avoid the work to deal with it, in my opinion, and I think I'm guilty as charged in some areas, if you will. Melissa, your thoughts on why it's so hard to even do the work, because using her analogy, I think to do the work means you got to volunteer to go through the triggers, and that's why a lot of people avoid the work, in my opinion, maybe.
Yeah, there's several things in here. Just the one thing, even going back to the snippet, you know, that Fala did, that you played of hers, and all I heard in that when she was talking, I just kept hearing the words, these are protective measures, right? So when we're trying to protect ourselves, what are we protecting ourselves from? We're protecting ourselves from this continued pain. So as you're saying about, you know, you're going through, these things are what, and that we call their trauma reenactments, to feel this. One of the reasons it's so hard is because when these traumatic experiences happen to us, our brain literally experiences a rewiring of our circuitry. So those pathways, our coping, our resilience, those things change. So to Ashley's point and talking about when that psychologist or psychiatrist was talking about that electrical charge, when you think about a power plant, right, there's all kinds of wires and there's pathways and circuitry and things like that happening. Think about your brain the same way. This stuff changes for us. And we often focus on, well, I know what I don't want. But what is it that you do want? If you want something different, we have to do something different, feel something different, be something different. But that also requires us to experience a different way to maneuver through the pain, whether it is current pain, perceived pain, or remembered pain. And give yourself permission to stumble along the way. Life is a journey, but so is this healing. But if you keep touching that wound, it's going to continue to bleed. But if you go inside that wound and you start to repair it from the inside out, over time, there is going to be a beautiful thing that's going to help you to navigate to what you want, what you need, and most importantly, what you deserve as a human. And we've been through some things in our community. We deserve better. And it's time to choose better.
No, I love it. I love it. I'm going to follow here. And I'll just, you know, make a kind of silly analogy, but I've always thought it was a good one. I remember years ago when we did, I mean, we've always, if you will, delved into the mental health aspect of what we do here at Mental Dialogue. We're not called this for any reason. Mental Dialogue, just to give a concept behind it, if we can improve the dialogue you have inside your own head, you will be better, therefore our community is better. So we're always looking for the Elisas and the Fallas that are dealing with the psychology that we're going through. And so one mistake that we quite often make for taking the attempt to heal, if you will, and improve our mental wellness is, we don't relate it to physical training. Like I'm in the middle of trying to lose 26 pounds and I'm up and down with it. I'm almost there, but I can't get there if I don't get on the treadmill or if I skip the workout. So I have to Elisa's point, dig into the wound. I have to deal with some of the pain to get my ultimate win and sacrifice. Fila, if you will, address what I heard out of Ashley's comment that made me realize, hey, people can hear this. And there's one other aspect too. Ashley said, try to go back to when, you know, this first thing first happened. The other part of it is sometimes the trauma is so strong, you don't even always remember where it started. So for somebody like that, it's even scarier to come talk to someone like you or talk to one of our psychotherapists that we have in the club. Just your thoughts about that for someone who's don't even remember their trauma per se, because that's what trauma will do sometimes.
Absolutely. So I love what Ashley added to the conversation and what Elisa also just kind of put in front of us, that we've been through so much. And to your point, we don't always know. One of the prompts that I give to my clients to ask themselves is, who was I before my trauma made me believe I had to be who I am? And I'll say that again. Who was I before my trauma made me believe I had to be who I am? That's a question that we all should be asking ourselves, because we live this life, which traumatizes us every single day on different levels. And when she was talking about the electric charge, it really reminded me of the skit of Dave Chappelle on the Chappelle Show where he used to like jump out and be like, kind of gotcha N-word. That's how I see triggers. I'm still here. Remember me, right? I didn't go anywhere. And so as we do the work, right, exactly. Right, here I am. You thought I was gone, but I'm not, because you haven't done the level of work that you need to do to resolve it. And even in doing the work, to the caller's point, these things don't go away. They're components of you. You simply get to shift your level of awareness and your level of response. So you become responsive instead of reactionary. And that's so important for us to know. I'm never supposed to be angry again if I'm so-called healed. I'm never supposed to be upset again. I'm never supposed to feel the trigger. Yes, you get to feel the trigger, and you get to be in relationship with the trigger to then ask it, what are you trying to tell me? What do I need to know? What are you showing me about this part of my life and experience that I need to tap into, right? And we talk about the challenge and the hardship of changing. And yes, change is hard. It's not easy because it's not supposed to be. And people will not change until the pain of their current situation is harder than the change, than the pain of actually changing. So you have to get to point of like, I'm sick and tired, right? I'm sick and tired of being,
being tired,
and I cannot take it anymore. So folks are going to be the same person until the pain of being who they are is harder than the pain of becoming something else.
No, I love it. We're up against our break, so we'll go to the next break. Ashley, if you want to get back in, come off the one and back on. You know the process already. For the other caller out there, if you're interested in getting on the dialogue this morning, you do have to press one. If you're online listening, the number to get in is 646-787-1691. Again, you do have to press one if you want to join the conversation. We'll be right back, where all I ask is that you think.
Hey, are you a wine drinker?
A little bit here and there, but my wife definitely loves hers.
Why you ask?
Man, you got to try this vegan wine by Sip and Share Wines. I ran across them at this event in Atlanta, and now I keep me a few bottles at the house. What flavor you like?
I like me a good red or maybe a nice dipping deal or something. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, try this sweet red first.
That's nice and smooth right there. Yeah, that's kind of sweet like I like it. You know what I'm talking about?
For sure. That's why I like that one as well. Hey, now try this Conjure Zinfandel. This one was featured in Forbes magazine as a top 10 drink for the summer. See what you think.
Oh, okay. Now that's fire right there. Where can I get a bottle of that?
Just go to sipandsharewines.com. They'll ship it right to your door. They black on too.
Oh, yeah? Okay, you said what? Sipandsharewines.com? Is that it?
Yep.
So what actually is your wounded inner child? Well, it's a metaphor for all your unhealed wounds from childhood, composed of certain thoughts, feelings, and bodily sensations that are triggered by specific stimuli, throwing you into a trance-like state of powerlessness, shame, and fear. So when your wounded inner child is triggered, you emotionally become the traumatized child you were, still trapped in dysfunction or abuse, which can significantly distort the way you perceive yourself and your relationships. Okay, so I want to bring the metaphor of the wounded inner child to life. Let's talk about Bobby, who grew up with an abusive alcoholic father. Now let's flash forward 25 years and Bobby is married to Julie, who is a sweetheart. However, Bobby still carries significant wounds from childhood that are instantly triggered by certain stimuli. For example, if his wife disagrees with him, he is immediately thrown into a panic and then compulsively avoids the potential conflict any way he can. But why? Because arguments in his childhood always led to pain and chaos. But in present reality, Julie is frustrated with him because he rarely expresses his opinion or lets her know what he needs or wants. She longs for his feedback, but rarely gets it, and so she feels alone in a marriage with a man she's realizing she doesn't even know. Finally, she gives him an ultimatum: get therapy or I'm leaving. So here's another example. Loretta was physically abused by her mother and then became riddled with feelings of shame, fear, and powerlessness. She eventually married Rodney, an angry man who drank too much. She tried everything to make him happy, but never succeeded for very long, so she felt like a failure. And when he abused her, triggering the shame of the wounded inner child, she blamed herself for his abusive behavior, just like she did when her mother abused her. Thus, Loretta's feelings of shame, fear, and powerlessness kept her trapped in an abusive relationship.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host, emotional intelligence coach, Alisa Word. This morning's discussion question, why am I attracted to trauma relationships, with our special guest, emotional wellness coach, Fala Antoine. So we kind of hear a deep dive into the thing y'all brought up at the very beginning of the show, those inner childhood wounds that stick with us, if you will. And so the thing that I hear on that, and Alisa, we'll go to you, is because I like to keep harping on the unawareness part, because until I, in a sense, got in this space and dealt with, we have, again, a lot of therapists that are part of the community club, until I was exposed to people like yourself, Alisa, to a degree, I can look back on my life and unknowingly was doing some aspects of what, you know, those examples that you just heard. And so I just want to kind of point out for someone, if you will, that's unaware of the trauma, one of the ways to possibly recognize it is if you find yourself blaming yourself based on you not being able to accomplish this aspect of something that you were chasing in the relationship. And in a sense, that person may, if you will, may disregard you. And instead of looking at their disregard as the abuse that it actually is, you find a way to blame yourself, saying, if I had have just did this, or if I could have just did this. And I'm highlighting what I'm saying now is because I think people can be aware of that they do that more so than being able to pinpoint, this is my trauma. And so I think it's an opportunity for someone who is unaware to maybe become aware of their patterns in a way for them to listen to what we say and say, you know what, let me figure this thing out, if that makes sense. Go ahead, Alisa.
You know, when I heard you just say that and we talk about this blaming of ourselves, right, so I'm going to actually connect this to white supremacy culture. Because, you see, when slavery happened, slaves got blamed for being beat because they were bad. They got blamed for being beat because they didn't do what they were told. So when we talked earlier, I didn't mention the term epigenetics intentionally, right? Because I know sometimes people do get caught up in the minutiae of the terminology and all that. So we're having a conversation. But when Fala brought it up, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Think about that. Those eggs of that mother being in the grandmother and generation, right? So that trauma impacting people and already bringing a predisposition to certain things, and then these other things happen in your life in current times, then blame. We live in a world full of blame. Somebody has to be responsible for everything that happens. So when we put these protective measures in place, it's, I should have seen that. I should have known that. How you want to know that when that's not how you think? That's not how you behave. You got bamboozled. And then that bamboozlement, all of a sudden, now you want to take responsibility for being the fool. No, the fool is the person that did it. You are the person who is not going to be foolish, because you are now going to say, there is something that I want. In order for me to get what I want, I'm going to have to be willing to be open, to be different, and that is okay. I'm all right just like I am, but I'm going to be better for what I want, where I want to be. Take your power back. You own this power. So choose it. Choose it wisely. Yeah.
That makes sense. Let me throw this out, Fala, if you will. And so we're trying to navigate the fine line of accountability and recognizing, you know, what is and what is not our own within these relationships, right? If the question is, why am I attracted to these trauma relationships? So in navigating that fine line, I've had this experience, and I think it was mentioned a little bit in that cut, but let's just keep trying to dig deeper with this. But I've had a situation where it ended, and as it ended, I was able to recognize, if you will, some levels of trauma in my partner to the extent that I was actually glad that it was ending, just based on what was coming up in the moment, right? Like in the moment of it ending, in my opinion, didn't seem like have a lot to it. But when I realized and listened to her perspective, if you will, and I was like, wow, that's not how that happened. But obviously from her perspective, it did. And it was made a lot worse than it actually was. And I was like, wow, I'm in a sense glad I avoided staying in this situation. But I'm highlighting this because if that person sees it through that trauma lens, it's almost no matter what you do or say for them, without them doing their own work, they're never going to necessarily recognize what the situation actually is. At least that's my perspective. I want to hear your thoughts on that process, because it's a give and take, and we don't want to get in a situation where we're running out of every situation, right? Because we both typically come with some levels of trauma, if you will, but it's very tough if your mate isn't doing the work at all and keeps seeing things strictly through a trauma lens, and you're on the tail end of that trying to figure it out. You're really never going to figure that out because they can't see things for what they are. Your thoughts, Queen?
So I love this question, Montoya, because the truth of the matter is that we are all in relationship with ourselves and every other aspect and component of life, right? We're in relationship with other people. We're in relationship with our own experiences. We're in relationship with our careers, all of that. And what often happens when someone is operating from an unresolved, unhealed level of trauma and they get into a relationship with you, they're not truly able to connect with you or fully be in that relationship and be present with you because they are in a relationship with their trauma as the dominant force in the entirety of the situation. So when I see you through my trauma. When I feel this experience, I feel it through my trauma. When I am in connection with you, I'm connected through my trauma. So you are there, in fact, as a way for that individual to begin the healing process. But when you don't take the steps to begin that healing process and resolve the trauma that you see, what happens is that you deepen the hurt. Each individual in a relationship is having their own experience while being in the relationship. That's why I feel how I feel. You feel how you feel, right? I'm having my experience with what's happening. You're having your experience with what's happening. Ultimately, what we want is to be able to come together, share our experiences, and create common ground. But if I'm stuck within those traumatic experiences, I don't have the emotional capacity to deal with you one-on-one and be connected to you fully or even take in and hear what you are trying to tell me about your experience. This is why folks need to understand that you cannot save anyone who is not trying to save themselves. You cannot heal anyone who's not working on healing themselves, because they will suck you into their trauma pattern and their trauma narrative, and it will just create more chaos. And I quickly just wanted to say, Alisa, you are my type of person. You are my people, girl, because there's no way for us to have these conversations without talking about our generational trauma and our generational patterns and pathologies. And we do get to recognize that healing is new for us. We didn't have this privilege when we were enslaved. We didn't have this privilege in our American experience or in our modern day experience as Black people. We come from a beautiful legacy of love and all of that, but our current awareness comes from so much trauma, and we don't know how to begin to heal because that's not what we were afforded in the past. So this is an opportunity for you to not only take these steps for yourself, but to extend this privilege to those who came before you who are going to come after you.
No, I love that. And I have to, if I will, highlight, again, mental dialogue from the standpoint of what y'all are talking about now is why this community club exists. For those who are just hear us on Saturdays, we're not just a radio show, if you will, but it exists for that very reason. What I what I always say is just a layman extension to Dr. Joy DeGruy's work. I always say her name wrong, who obviously did the research and on these matters or whatever, but we're almost a layman approach to kind of make it, if you will, feasible for the people to hear what we're talking about now, because ultimately, you know, really a point that she always makes, I just kind of paraphrase it into my own terms, there's never been a point in our Black American experience or our African-American American experience where we've been allowed to get on the couch, when it's clearly we've went through the, in a sense, some of the worst trauma of people could experience. There's never been an opportunity to get on the couch. And so that's what mental dialogue is. If I could say that as we go to the top of the hour break, we'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Babe, where did you get that hat and t-shirt? I like that.
Oh, I got this at moneymotivation.com. It's fresh, right?
Yes, and I love the message on it, too. You are the hustle, huh?
That's what the shirt says. I am the hustle. They embody the entrepreneurial spirit, and what I like the most, it's more than a brand. It's a lifestyle for those who want to put in the work and expect to have the finer things in life. I also follow them on Instagram. Check this post out.
If you believe money is the root of all evil, you're using it wrong?
Or how about this one? Excuses made $0 an hour.
I like those. What's their IG?
At moneymotivation.co.
But do they have any ladies gear?
Yes, you're going to love the clothing line they got for the ladies. Matter of fact, pull up their website, moneymotivation.com, and I'm going to get you a few things so we can both look like money.
Everywhere I go, go, and everywhere I be, I don't even talk, talk, they still know it's me. Cause I look like money, smell like money, talk like...
Truth seekers, please understand, Mental Dialogue is much more than just a talk show. Each and every Saturday, we communicate with you for two reasons, to dialogue and connect. On the dialogue side, we cater to you intellectual outcasts who feel you have no place for honest discourse on race, sex, culture, and African-American business. On the Connect side, we've created a community where you can connect with experts specifically in finance, whether personal or business, and mental health, whether it's trauma or to optimize performance, along with all the other skill sets from other MD community members. Our mission was to create a virtual nationwide neighborhood where African Americans learn to trade ideas, goods, and services through social media, meetup, and this podcast. To become a neighbor of the Mental Dialogue Community Club, please visit us at mentaldialogue.com. We are better with you than we are without you. We can be neighbors even though we don't live next to each other. Hashtag raise the culture.
Get trapped in how you feel, and ultimately what you truly feel about yourself deep down is what you are manifesting. So that may be your, if your current situation is not what you want, you're probably, in his opinion, stuck in a place of trauma where you, what you feel about yourself may not be even what you project to the world. So I don't know, any thoughts on that, Dr. G?
Yeah. I want to just speak on why we get trapped and what's trapping us, right? One aspect of that. And one aspect of why we get trapped and what's trapping is because we become addicted to the neurochemical response of the trauma bonding, right? So the trauma bonding produces a neurochemical response, cortisol, adrenaline, right? Anger, excitation, right? And oftentimes we can become addicted to that somatic experience, so much so that when we're not experiencing it, we imagine it so that we can get that fix, that fix in our body, right? And this is one of the things that traps us. And this is why you see some people that consistently engage in drama, because the neurochemical response in the body, and they need that response, right? Even though it can be counterproductive, it is something. It's something other than feeling numb, right? And so just one aspect of why we get trapped is because of the somatic experience that it creates.
Wow, that's deep, Doc. Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, with special guest co-host Lisa Word. It's more a discussion question. Why am I attracted to a trauma relationship? Our special guest is Father Antoine. So we hear a cut from one of our black level psychotherapists, Dr. G, breaking down the actual psychology and I guess maybe the hormonal reaction. Maybe I'm saying that correctly. But Father, I'll kind of let you jump in because sometimes we are experiencing, I know she messed up, but, or I know she's like this, but I kind of like that, or vice versa for the woman, like being, you know, in a sense, attracted to the bad boys, if you will. There's something there there's an allure there, and Dr. G kind of breaks that down from a psychology standpoint. So jump in, if you will, Father.
Sure, and I love that clip, and I love that he approached it from that perspective of, like, there are actual chemicals being released in your body when you are experiencing certain things, you know, like fear or excitement or rage or anger or whatever these things are. And so there's a part of you that is releasing the message to continue this act and this action. And I believe it's important for us to understand that, again, when we're talking about, you know, this is all my fault and it's about me and I chose this, but recognizing that your body is playing a part in this. And there's a book called The Body Keeps the Score that also talks about this in depth and in length, about how your body remembers the emotional experiences that you have. And when you get into situations that are familiar, even if the drama and trauma is not happening, your body will release those chemicals that are aligned with the trauma from the past experience. So it's so vital for us to have these conversations and ask ourselves the questions of why am I doing this? Of why am I in this experience again? What is this making me feel? Do I want to repeat these results so that we can really get to the root of why we are having the experiences and the results that we are. And so understanding that trauma is a holistic experience. It impacts the body. It impacts the psyche. It impacts the mind. It impacts the heart. It impacts your emotions. And then that, I think, will help us to recognize, oh, all of these things combined are leading me to make the choices that I am, are leading me to attract and choose the partners that I am, so you don't feel so helpless, so hopeless, and so you don't attach so much self-judgment and self-blame, but you get to see all of this simply as information to make better choices.
Yeah, absolutely, because without the awareness, you don't quite know why, we don't always know why you have that attraction, and you'll say that, I don't know why I'm attracted to, and hopefully that's, we're letting you know, like you said, that your body's actually doing what it's doing. And I would like to highlight this, and Lisa, I want to hear your thoughts on that cut from Dr. G as well. But I always even like to walk people into this aspect of it, because, again, y'all have been talking about the inner childhood wounds. So, in a sense, if you're a young boy or young girl or when you were a child, your parents could absolutely love you but have their own traumatic experience, and maybe some aspects in their parenting was abusive in some sense. And I'm not trying to shoot to the worst abuse and that type of thing, but I am highlighting that in aspects of that abuse, it might be a mother constantly yelling at you, or I'll just use that one example. So it could be, you know, your parents constantly yelling at you when they're correcting you. And as a child, your nature is, as a baby, you just want to love this person who was, you know, in a sense, brought you into the world and taking care of you. And in that area, you come familiar with, you know, when I act out, some kids figure this out, when I act out, I get attention, and that attention could be negative attention. So that little childhood thing could be something that you absolutely desire when you become an adult within your relationships. And so if you're in a situation where that drama doesn't exist, you will start questioning, does this person love me? And you won't even know it was developed in childhood because you got used to the constant correction when you acted out, and the correction was done in a way that wasn't that traumatized you versus it being done in a way that doesn't traumatize you. You won't even be able to connect the two. Go ahead, Alisa.
I love that. I remember, I think it was Maya Angelou had said to Oprah once that when she talked about her mother, you know, your mother did the best she could with what she had, and when she knew better, you know, she did better. Oftentimes, people even know better, but they don't choose better, right? So they don't know that they have the option to choose because we haven't been taught that we have the option to choose. And based on what you're even talking about, and I love that, I feel like he's bringing up the word capacity because I talk about capacity a lot with my clients. But when you think about those parents too, right, people can be parenting through trauma. And then it creates this paradigm of chaos, the norm, and conditional love versus unconditional love is the norm. And then, you know, to Dr. G's point, which I love me some Dr. G, listen to him, you know, when you're addicted to the high, and I'm i.e. cortisol, adrenaline, the high of chaos, normal feels boring to you. And then we want to the point earlier y'all talked about trying to fix people, give them another chance, do this, that, is. A lot of that is what technically they call white knight syndrome. Sometimes we also can call it Captain Save-A-Hole syndrome. You can't save everybody, right? You can't make everybody be on the same road that you're on and doing at the same speed. There's cars on the road in different lanes all over the place. So your partner might be traveling at 25 miles an hour. Well, you're actually at 100 miles an hour because you're on the super speedway. Now, you have to make a decision there. Is this person still moving forward to get to 100, or are they going to stay at 25 forever? And why am I accepting that as my reality when I have the option to do something different for me?
Now, that's a great question. For the caller out there, you do have to press 1 if you're trying to join the conversation. If you're just listening via the phone, no problem. For anybody online that may have a question or want to give their 3 cents on this morning's discussion, 646-787-1691. Again, 646-787-1691. I love that analogy, Alisa. But, Fowler, any thoughts from what Alisa had to say?
So I love that analogy so much, right? Because maybe I have somewhere else to go or somewhere else to be, and you're not supposed to come with me. And I think that we want to take everybody on the road that we're traveling. Sometimes there is a sense of shame and there's a sense of guilt that comes along with healing, like that survivor's remorse, right? If I'm gaining this level of awareness and I'm moving at a faster pace or a faster speed, and now I'm recognizing some of my patterns, and I'm recognizing that I was parented from trauma and that maybe I'm relating in trauma, we want to try to pull those that we love and care about along with us, but your only job and your only responsibility is to do your own work, right? Keep your eyes on your own paper, put your oxygen mask on first, take care of yourself, and you get to allow your life to be an example to others. You get to allow your improvements and your level up to be an example to others. But one of the things that really stuck out to me that Alisa said was so many folks are parenting through trauma and parenting from trauma. And I wanted to kind of just touch on that because when we tend to think about doing anything from a traumatic perspective, we immediately go to the extreme anger, the extreme rage, right? But it's not always as visible. There are some people and some parents who are overly protective, right, of their children because they don't want their children to go through what they went through. There are some men and women who are overly cautious in relationships, and they vet folks way longer than they should. So I want us to be aware that even if you don't consciously feel like you've experienced trauma or you don't believe that you've had any trauma in your life, you still get to ask yourself those questions that Alisa mentioned. You still get to take a look at your current situation and say, is everything happening here happening the way I want it to, right? And sometimes if you don't know what you want, you can start by asking yourself, what is present in my current reality that I don't want? And start from there to kind of see if there's any presence of trauma in your life and in your relationships, because it doesn't always look the way that you think it should. It may come up as hyper-independence and you just think that you take care of everything and you're a boss chick. It may come up as being that overly protective parent where you don't recognize that you are minimizing and shrinking your children in the way that you parent them. So I want us to just think about this holistically so we can ask ourselves those deeper questions like Alisa mentioned.
Yeah, y'all might have to do the show without me now because you didn't brought up my vetting people too long stuff. You ain't got to throw all that in there, Paula. Like, you know, I'm okay. I thought I was okay doing that. Don't tell me I got some trauma around here. I don't know I got, don't want to have.
But can we destigmatize the word trauma, though? Can we do that?
I love it. Let me do that. Let me do that real quick. Let's do that after the break, if y'all don't mind. Let's do the break, and let's definitely do that. I'm being a little facetious, but it's perfect timing. So we'll be right back and listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think. We'll be right back, y'all.
What happens when your customers call your business and you're too busy to answer or call them back in a timely manner? You lose that business. Shockingly, 61% of inbound calls go unanswered. But fear not, tchmedia.ai is here to change the game. We specialize in capturing, nurturing, and converting your prospects into loyal customers. With our state-of-the-art communication solutions, no interaction will be left behind. When you miss a call, we've got you covered with automatic, engaging texts that keep your prospects connected and eager to choose you over your competitors. Don't let potential customers slip away. Make the smart choice with tchmedia.ai and skyrocket your conversions today. tchmedia.ai is here to change the game.
Question is simple. Why do y'all prefer projects?
Initially, and once again, this was something I really figured out as I got older. I preferred the project because I felt like if he messed up, it was kind of already knew he was going to mess up. So I wouldn't be as disappointed. Whereas if I got a man who was well put together, I thought he was well put together. Everyone else thought he was well put together, but he messed up. Nobody shit. Niggas ain't shit across the board. I think that I chose the project because if they messed up, I kind of already knew that. I can't be mad that my heart is broken because I chose the person who I knew messed up. Now, for other people, no one really wants to be with a perfect person because in reality, none of us think we are perfect. It's kind of weird being with someone who has everything together when you feel like you don't. And I think it makes you feel worse about yourself. So you choose the project because you are a project.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Alisa Word. This morning's discussion question, why am I attracted to trauma relationships? Our special guest is emotional wellness coach Fala Antwine. As we hear a cut from We Need to Talk, we've played that on the show before, but I thought it was poignant today because, and I'm going to point out what I said the last time we played this cut, it's his sister in a sense highlighting why she's willing to choose the project over, if you will, the well-put-together man. And something that I highlighted on the show, I think we were doing, I think it was the show of Do Men Want to Be Husbands? I think that's the one I first used to cut. And I want to highlight this one particular thing because, again, all of this dialogue applies to us as men and women. Obviously, these cuts are women talking, if you will. But I also want to highlight there's this thought process in the culture about, in a sense, who women choose. Like, that's a thing that gets thrown around in the quote-unquote gender war that I hate taking a part in. But I highlighted this on that show, and I want to highlight it today, that same concept applies to us as men. We might hear that cut and say, look at her. She's explaining why she chose the project. And I said, if you're the man who's upset at her explaining this conversation, that, you know, explaining why she does it, if you're upset with her, well, she's admitting she's a project, and you're mad at someone that you want who's a project as well. So it goes both ways, if what I'm saying is making sense, and it all applies to today's conversation. Why are you attracted? Why are you mad at her who's clearly saying, I got my issue, so I chose a trauma person, and you're mad at her for not choosing you, but you're selecting the same scenario. I'm just kind of highlighting it out because I think it needs to be said because I don't like the conversation being dropped at the feet of, look at who these women choose, if you're mad at those same women, if that makes sense. So, Father, special guest, I'll let you kind of jump in. I know I kind of added some extra context, but I felt it was necessary because I don't like how that cut can be left out there, if that makes sense.
No, get it, and I appreciate that so much. I absolutely don't take part in any of the rhetoric that puts black men and black women against each other, right? I believe that we are complementary to one another, and we need each other in order to resolve our collective trauma. But I think before the break, Alisa wanted to discuss us destigmatizing the word mm-hmm. trauma, and that is powerful and important as well, right? It's all information. And when I'm working with my clients and when I'm facilitating workshops, I am always of the position that there is no good or bad, no right or wrong in anything that we are discussing. It's simply about information, mm-hmm. right? Trauma is just a word so that we are able to compartmentalize what we're talking about and what has happened. And you get to destigmatize it in your own life as well. This is what I experienced. This experience was traumatic because it disrupted my normal pattern, my normal pathology. It does change your brain chemistry, and it guides you to think about things in a certain way that may not be beneficial for you. So I just wanted to touch on that as well, because I think that's so important for us to remember and recall. But when it comes to relationships, baby, we all got work to do, all of us, every single one of us. And we're all like wounded children until we recognize that there is a wound to heal. And the partner that you choose can be the catalyst to your healing. That's the goal. In its highest sense and highest form, we are supposed to help each other heal. But if we're not doing our individual independent work, what we then do is we deepen the hurt of our partner and we re-traumatize ourselves and those around.
No, absolutely. Alisa, jump back in. Ashley wants to jump in, but I want to let you continue down that process. And like you said, of destigmatizing trauma, you know, obviously I was being a little funny about Fowler bringing up something I know I used to do, was, you know, vet forever, if you will. And so, but to your point, it shouldn't hurt me based on, as she just said, calling it an experience. It is my experience. It did traumatize me, but again, an opportunity. But let me let you go ahead and, if you will, address what you were addressing, and then we're going to go to the caller.
Yeah, just real quick. There was, you know, the thing is, when we have these sorts of, like, behaviors and responses and all that kind of stuff like that, a lot of times it's just, you know, I keep going back to protective measures, right? I stick with that a lot when it comes to this trauma. And the question to ask ourselves oftentimes in these situations, you know, like with the clip that you played, you know, why she picked this. And in my head, I'm thinking to myself, who or what are you seeking to protect yourself from? Because that's a protective measure when you decided to choose this project over someone who's got that together. What are you protecting yourself from? Are you protecting yourself from the fear of abandonment that you have? You thinking that your capacity to grow to the level of this the perceived level where this person is something that's, you know, in question. And then the last thing I'll say about this whole thing too, real quick, and I don't even want to go to the caller, is oftentimes one of those protective measures is when people get to that space where they're like, you know what, I'm by myself, I don't need nobody, I can do it all, I'm fine, I don't need anyone, I've been doing it all my life by myself, I don't need anybody else. That is trauma screaming at us, because if we were meant to be on this earth alone, we would have separate earths, and we're not. We've got to find a way together to understand each other's language and to move forward. And that is about that capacity that Bella keeps talking about.
No, and I love you.
And Montoya, if I could.
Yeah, please go ahead, Father. No problem. Go ahead, Queen.
Yeah, just really quickly, I also wanted to piggyback off of that and just say, when we are choosing partners that are projects and where we have to put all of our focus into fixing them, it also is disassociative, right? It allows us not to take a look at ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It allows us not to focus on the work we need to do for ourselves. And so to Alisa's point of protecting myself from really having to see myself and focus on myself, I become avoidant now of my own challenges and issues. And then I pick the people who are not going to force me to elevate or see myself, but I can just dump all of my information and all of my perspective onto them and fixing them, which makes us feel like we're doing something, but
right.
we're really not.
You're
now, here's
making...
my $20 on the altar for that right now because she was preaching. I'm sorry. I had to say that.
I follow you. Here's
my $20 right now.
Hey, Father, you just came to the Mr. Dialogue show and started preaching on the corner, getting money dropped in the hat.
I'm
go
coming
ahead,
up.
Hey,
the
it's a win over here.
Has arrived.
It's a win over here. It's a win over here. Yeah, ultimately, it's you're psychologically making an excuse for yourself, and you don't want to own that that's what you're doing. When you're focused on helping everyone else who's not doing what they're supposed to do, and particularly in our relationships, and that can apply in bigger areas too, but today's conversation is about the individual relationship. You're absolutely making an excuse for doing your own work, and you don't want to deal with that subconsciously. All right, Ashley, what you got
truly.
For us?
And
back
real
up
quick,
in this thing?
Can I say one thing? I'm sorry.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
I know
you're
Ashley
fine. You're fine. Don't apologize.
Say,
go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to say, when you get wounded, your leg, right, even after it's healed, it might have a soft spot there, right? So wounds hurt. So what do? You protect that wound.
Right.
Trauma is like the mm-hmm. wound that you continue to protect, but it's never going to get the healing that it needs for you to continue to move forward. If you don't let it get stronger, the work
yeah,
that you're
so
doing.
Dope. That's so dope.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
mm-hmm.
Ashley, you're up in this thing with us again. What you got for us, Queen?
So I've enjoyed everything even more last time. I really love the point that it's all information. And I think even the emphasis on knowing that you're supposed to be triggered in relationships so that this stuff is coming up, that hopefully you're in a healthy relationship where someone is helping you to work through it. I think there's a part of us that kind of feels like we have to do it all on our own. I recognize that some of that is hyper-independent. But the other part of it is that we need each other in order for us to work through this and even heal it for ourselves. And it might not necessarily be with the person that caused the trauma. It could be your romantic relationship or your familial relationship. It could be a platonic relationship. But we do need relationships to be able to see these blind spots and to be able to have someone safely hold a mirror up to ourselves so that we can begin to do the work of healing those issues that we have. And I think it comes down to alignment and really beginning to trust ourselves. You know, I think that's like one part that just kind of gets missed for people is that, you know, it becomes that protection, as Elisa said, but then it's like, are you going to trust yourself? You have to practice those muscles of trusting yourself, of making small promises to yourself and keeping those so that you can begin to trust yourself. I know like that was the loop that I was caught in because I made a wrong decision in a bad relationship and stayed in it longer than I should have. But now I have to do the work of creating small changes that I can do in myself to show up for myself so that when I'm in these situations again, when I'm triggered again, when I'm feeling like there's a similar situation being presented, I have the trust and the confidence in myself because I've been doing the work, because I've been keeping promises to myself to choose to do things differently, knowing that it's all working the way that it should, right? And like removing the ego in terms of judgment, mm-hmm. being like, I did this wrong or I did this right. There's no right or wrong. It's what you did based on the information that you had, and trusting mm-hmm. yourself to know that even if it doesn't work out, it's going to work out. So that's all I wanted to add.
No, there ain't no all. That's a whole 4 cents right there. I'm going to give you an extra 3 cents on that one. That was amazing, Queen. You know, so thank you for your ad or your 3 cents this morning. Anybody out there listening that wants to be like Ashley, call in at 646-787-1691. Again, you do have to press 1 to join the conversation, but thank you so much for that amazing 3 cents, Queen. And I love how she's pointing out the aspect of trusting yourself. I think it immediately relates to how Elisa said, when you get to that stage, if for those that get to that stage of I'm fine by myself, I'm good by myself, how that's screaming inner wound, how that's screaming trauma because what you are, like to her point, what you're actually typically saying for most people that are in that state is, I don't trust myself to figure out how to be compatible with another. They don't consciously say it that way. It comes out like Alisa alluded to, I'm good by myself. I don't need anyone. It comes out that way, but you're really saying, I don't trust myself in who I choose, or I don't trust myself in my ability to be compatible with another. So I love that. 3 cents from Ashley. We are up against another break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Hey, are you a wine drinker?
A little bit here and there, but my wife definitely loves hers. Why you ask?
Man, you got to try this vegan wine by Sip and Share Wine. I ran across them at this event in Atlanta, and now I keep me a few bottles at the house. What flavor you like?
I like me a good red or maybe a nice dipping deal or something. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, try this sweet red first.
Okay, that's nice and smooth right there. Yeah, that's kind of sweet like I like it. You know what I'm talking about?
For sure, that's why I like that one as well. Hey, now try this Conjure Zinfandel. This one was featured in Forbes magazine as a top 10 drink for the summer. See what you think.
Oh, okay, now that's fire right there. Where can I get a bottle of that?
Just go to sipandsharewines.com. They'll ship it right to your door. They black on too.
Oh yeah? Okay, you said what? Sipandsharewines.com, is that it?
Yep.
Bad.
The reason why relationships don't last is because most people not looking for a relationship. They looking for a therapist. That's why you ain't got no peace, because that ain't your partner. That's your patient. Beware of people that identify as a friend or a significant other, but they're really a spiritual and psychological leech. People that will run you dry and rob you of your youth. People that will leave their demons with you and never look back. People that want you to pour into them, but they ain't got a drop to pour into you. Talking about, I want somebody that can give me peace, heal my trauma, and deal with the mood swings and... You are not obligated to solve no problem that existed before you. Ain't nothing wrong with giving advice and praying for folks, but real love will not have you put your sanity on the line. Get you somebody that's healed, somebody that's whole, so y'all can equally pour into one another. So when problems arise, it's just another bump in the road and not a tragedy. So the next time somebody want to make you their in-home therapist disguised as a significant other, take your phone out and send them a Cash App request. And when they ask, what's this? Say, this is my hourly fee, because you will not make a fool out of me.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Alisa Word. This morning's discussion question, why am I attracted to trauma relationships? Our special guest is emotional wellness coach, Phyla Antoine. It's a clear cut. I forgot where I got that cut from. But I wanted to specifically highlight something in that cut. Obviously, that sister, something I found on, I think, on TikTok, or maybe IG. But either way, that sister's passion, while it was kind of in a sense possibly maybe considered a well-said point, I wanted to get specifically into this aspect. We keep talking about, in a sense, why we choose trauma. We've talked about, if you will, the epigenetics from a generational standpoint, individually what's happening inside of our bodies. At the end of the day, that sister points out, find you someone who's whole and you can avoid being their therapist. And since we typically all are, as y'all have continued to say, Alisa and Phyla, that we're in continuous relationship with ourselves, and most of us, especially if you're part of the Black American experience, are going to come to relationships with some level of trauma, if you will. And so ideally, it would be easy to drop it off at, find you someone that's whole and go forward. The reality is, quite often, we're both coming with some level of it. And so I want to now, if we can, talk about the challenge of when is it at a stage in which you can deal with it? Because at the end of the day, if you are focused on lifetime partnership for those who, you know, want to get married or look to get married one day, and ideally everybody wants that to last. The thing that we're not taught culturally, in my opinion, about what's included in marriage is the effort and work to be compatible with another. That is, if you will, the baseline work. Well, that baseline work may be 10 years in discovering a trauma that your partner didn't even know they had, but something triggered it. And so you can't just leave it to them at that point. Now you have to figure out how to work through it. So it's kind of like I'm saying a lot, but what does that look like in your opinion, Fowler? When is it appropriate to stay to work through it? What does that even look like, if that makes sense?
So I appreciate the passion that the sister had and that she expressed, but being the loudest in the room doesn't necessarily mean you're the most informed, right? And so there were a lot of things in her stance that were problematic for me. The idea that, like you're saying, the idea that anyone who comes to me needs to have it all together, right, and needs to be the epitome of wholeness, is extremely problematic because it does negate the fact that there are aspects of yourself that you cannot learn on mm-hmm. your own. Mm-hmm. You have to be in connection yes. and in relationship with another person in order to even see certain aspects of
right.
yourself. So you may think you're whole. You may think you're healed. You may appear and present healed and whole. But then when you get into the relationship, the nature of that relationship is going to provoke things in you that could not previously be provoked.
Exactly.
So when we're coming together, it is our job to provoke one another, to see ourselves in a new way, to grow deeper, to elevate, to heal. So seeing a semblance of humanity in another person is not a negative. It's not a bad thing. We have to allow each other space to be flawed so that we can begin to alleviate those flaws, to resolve those flaws, to heal that trauma. However, when you're in a position in a state with someone and you recognize that you're the only one doing the heavy lifting, that they are not making an attempt, making an effort, they're not being consistent in their, you know, their walk towards progress, that's when you ask yourself, do I really want to be here? And one of the other things she said that I take issue with is the fact that when she said, I'm not responsible for any problems that were here before me. No, absolutely you are. If the generation before us wasn't able to solve it and resolve it, it becomes our responsibility, because if we don't solve it and resolve it, it will be laid on the next generation.
Absolutely.
So taking out the idea that of this individualism, this is one of the things that plagues us in the Black
yes.
community.
Yes.
Yes, we get to be individual in nature in some areas, but this work is not just about you. It's about the collective. It's about the community. It's about the whole. So recognizing that part of our responsibility is to help ourselves, to help one another, but also going back to the idea of capacity, knowing what you have capacity for so that you can then decide when something may be outside of your realm of involvement and seeing and knowing and recognizing when it's time to step away. But again, you won't know that until you are in relationship with someone else to learn about your own capacity.
Pass the collection plate. You so right, Alisa.
Church.
Pass
and
the collection
yes.
plate.
Teamwork.
Well,
teamwork, yeah.
All right now. Queen, you are so on it right now. I got to jump in a little bit and reprocess
Please.
Some of that.
Yes.
I reprocess or restate it or whatever, just again, just for somebody who may be hearing some of what you just said for the first time. And so I just want to reiterate something I think is helpful, again, for anybody listening that may be hearing it. I'm getting some texts saying they're loving what you're saying, Queen. So everybody's feeling you right now. When I even mentioned before you said what you said so well, when I mentioned prior to you responding to me, when I mentioned the idea of the baseline that we're missing going into long-term relationships, long-term marriages, is the understanding of the effort to be compatible with another. You highlighted that because, to your point, you can only go so far by yourself. There's tests you can't have on your own. You, as you said, You have to be in relation with another to even be faced with the test. So that goes right in line with what I was attempting to say when I said the effort to be compatible with another is what's missing from the individual culture. The idea of being the best that you can, trying to be whole, you can only go so far. It does not include the higher level of, now, how can I learn to be compatible with another? And as we both grow and still figure out how to make that work, that's what long-term commitment actually looks like. And it is to our nature to be communal, because together you can go higher. With another, you can be go higher. That is our human nature. And again, I'm just reiterating that, to Fowler's point, American individualism has been extremely harmful from a culture that comes from communal to learn these ways and now no longer connect how individualism cannot take you to your highest point. And we now selfishly get out of committed situations because of our focus on ourselves. And so, again, this is just my reiteration. That's not even close to what Fowler said, but I wanted to add my 3 cents, if you will. Go ahead, Alisa.
So a couple of things in there. You know, I just wanted to say, like, when you think about certain things, the inability to have a healthy relationship, or someone's inability to have unhealthy relationship behaviors, doesn't have to be the identity you choose for yourself, right? Just because somebody else has those behaviors. So that's the first thing. And then understanding, too, that, you know, we're in a time now when we're really starting to understand the need to recognize things like low self-esteem, low self-confidence, and, again, a stigma being with those things. If somebody never gave you a cup of confidence or a cup of self-esteem, then you just don't have any, or they only gave you a little sip because they only had a little bit. You don't have that much. And that's okay, but you can get some of that. You can go get it. It's actually out there. It's abundant. So it's not something you have to continue to live without. But the other part of it is, too, is that hyper, you know, independence is also kind of interchangeably named as, like, rugged individualism, which, again, we see there's some papers out there. If y'all never read papers on this white supremacy culture, right, this rugged individualism, because we come from a collectivist type of culture of us working together. But when you have this separatism like this, this breaks down, of course, our community, our, you know, economic abilities and things like that, but it breaks down the black family, the black and brown families as well. And relationships, though, whether it's with your children, your mate, or whatever, these things are the biggest mirror that you will ever see in your life, because there's a reflection of you with the other person and a reflection with that other person with you. And sometimes that reflection is healthy, sometimes it's not as healthy, but it doesn't mean we have to walk away from everything, but we need to know what to walk away from. And, you know, we can't always treat people like a paper plate, right? Sometimes mm-hmm. you need the good china. And you got the good china, but it might have a chip in it, but that's all right. But you got to trust yourself early, right? Early intervention is the key. Trust yourself early enough to walk away from what's not good for you or good to you before it continues to traumatize you, so you don't have to later then ask the questions, do I stay or do I go? So if we do that preventative work in the beginning and start working on that, that's how we change the game. But if you're already in it, you have some decisions to make. Is this a paper plate or is this some good china with a chip? If it's good china with a chip, go get your repair kit. Y'all go to therapy together, work it out.
No, I love it. I love it. And I will highlight, as we continue to highlight, do the inner work. You know, find a follow Antoine, find a Alisa word to, you know, if you're a mate saying, I don't feel emotionally connected to you, and you've been, you know, as a man, maybe been raised to not share your emotions or whatever, figure out how to do that within your own manliness, if you will. So, you know, figure out, because the relationships have evolved where that has now become more of a requirement than in the past. That is a reality, whether we like it or not, or whatever the case may be. But just know that if you were to take heed to what you're hearing today from both of these amazing guests to begin that inner work, it will also help you with what your own capacity is within the relationship. Like, the word itself, relationship. And to a degree, we feel like within the culture and within American culture, Western culture, we're struggling with our relationships. The word itself goes back to, as I keep highlighting, relationship, the ability to be compatible with another. What does that work look like? It includes self-work, understanding your own traumas so that you can have more ability to cope and deal with what comes with that mirror that's going to happen as soon as you get into relationship. We're up against the last break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
LNG Technology Services, we are your industry leader in aircraft and heavy equipment repair services. In commercial business for over 15 years, LNG technicians have over 150 years of equipment-specific knowledge and are known industry-wide for returning worn-out, broken, and overused ground support equipment back to the user in working better than new conditions. For a service job done right at a value unparalleled in the industry, contact LNG Technology Services at 478-781-4860. Again, for a service job done right, that number is 478-781-4860. 781-4860. LNG Technologies is a Mental Dialogue Gold member and proud sponsor of the Mental Dialogue community.
Are you intimidated by money? While this is a question most people never think to ask themselves, but when forced to think about it, many people realize they have unrecognized fears that truly affect how they deal with money. If you want to learn more about money and the fears that keep you from prosperity, join us for Making Money Matter Monday, where money meets mental health with personal finance coach Ashley Thomas and psychotherapist Dr. Katrina Pitts. Every second Monday of the month, find out if you're intimidated by money and what to do about it. To receive a link to this free Zoom event, please DM the Making Money Matter or the Mental Dialogue Instagram pages or contact 404-604-9477.
Here's something that doesn't often get talked about when it comes to healing from a toxic relationship, and that is trying to be in a healthy one after you've been in a toxic one. One of the things that's going to throw you off when you start dating again after a toxic relationship is you're going to realize that healthy men don't love bomb. Healthy men don't do all of the manipulative things that the toxic guy does, and they're not looking to create an emotional addiction with you. And so the relationship and the dating is going to seem boring, is going to seem like they're not into you, is going to seem just very off. But it's not because they're not into you, it's not because the relationship is actually boring, it's because you're used to being loved by, you're used to trauma bonding, and you're not going to get that with a healthy man.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. I actually have Ashley Thomas still on the line, so I'm going to put her on the spot. If you just heard about Making Money Matter Mondays, for the community that knows, we have been ongoing for over a year now, where Making Money Matter Mondays is where money and mental health meets, and I happen to have on our financial coach, Ashley. So if you will, Ashley, real quick, I'm putting you on the spot. Hope you're available. Tell them what we're doing on the 9th. It's just in a couple of days, and how they can be a part, how anybody listening can be a part of it. This is, again, an ongoing community. We are more than a talk show, and this is one of our examples. Go ahead, Ashley. Thank you for being with us.
Yeah. So on Monday, we will be doing a fourth quarter check-in, just going over some information, things that you should look out for as we are in the final stretch of 2023. And you can either message Mental Dialogue or myself at Making Money Matter LLC on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and get the link to join this free conversation. It's 100% free. We don't record the sessions, unfortunately, because everyone has a chance to work with Dr. Pittman and ask personal questions. And so because of that, we don't want any HIPAA violations. So the best thing to do is to join us 8 p.m. every second Monday of the month.
Well, absolutely. Please join that community, because our relationship with money within our culture definitely has to be dealt with. Again, we are serious about this work. But back to this morning's discussion question, why am I attracted to trauma relationships, featuring emotional intelligence coach Alisa Word as well as emotional wellness coach Fala Antoine, highlighting the cut from a coach Taylor Nicole. She does relationship coaching as well, and she's highlighting what a healthy relationship looks like if you're coming out of a toxic one. So I will say, in relation to, again, feeling like I've done enough self work to, quote unquote, be healthy, if you will, actually, when, in my opinion, when two healthy people meet, the situation can be real easy. It's super easy, if you will, even if you one day decide this can't work long time, it happens without trauma. And then this can't happen long term. That decision happens without trauma. And then the beauty of, if you do decide, yes, we want to do this long term, it's so different than the traumatic relationships that we may have been used to in the past when we hadn't dealt with our unresolved trauma. Fala, if you will, jump in on that cut or anything you heard.
Absolutely. I often hear people say, you know, healthy relationships are boring. And to an extent, they may feel boring to someone who is always used to having their emotions highly charged through trauma. But you experience such a sense of self-awareness in a healthy relationship because you are able to see yourself, right, without all of the trauma and the chaos. And your partner generally will hold you accountable to operating in a healthy way as well. If you have a partner who is doing their own work and self-assured and self-aware. So the power in that is that you're constantly being held accountable to show up as the version of yourself that deserves to be in that relationship. Mm-hmm. And whenever you become disruptive, or if you are triggered and you go back to that trauma place, it will cause such dismantling of what's being built in the relationship that both parties will feel it and will have to address it, right? Because it's not what we're doing here. When we have two people who are trauma bonded, all we're doing is re-inflicting trauma, and so that's normal. But in the confines and the space of a healthy relationship, you are held accountable. You are challenged to be better. You are presented with information that allows you to make better choices. And it does become easy in the sense that you learn what feels good to you in a deeply emotional way, not like what's a dopamine response, what is an addictive response, but wow, this feels good. My nervous system is calmed, conscious. I'm not worried about anything, but I simply get to be in this space and just experience it fully. And that is when you know that you are really in a healthy relationship.
No, absolutely. I mean, and you're challenged, and the challenge actually feels good to you, right? Like, because you keep using that word accountability, no accountability is gonna go unturned in that relationship, because as you just highlighted, this is not what we're doing. So they can't help but address, why did you make that mistake? And you may find out, I slipped up and went back into, like you mentioned earlier, an old version of myself in this moment, or I was triggered. And you don't get the freedom to let that ride for a few months and then it blow up one day, because that's not how the conversation is going to go. It's, no, I saw this. Or you, even in you thinking you saw something, sometimes you're wrong in that. But the beauty is y'all have a dialogue, and you know that you're heard. Because it's not one person afraid of the accountability, because the accountability triggers that unresolved trauma. So it's not boring. Mm-hmm. It may be mundane to those outside looking in, but what they feel and the joy they feel and even the hard times are different, because they feel nothing like the drama of the past. Go ahead, Alisa, if you will. Jump in, Queen.
Yeah. Just another real quick analogy, right? So when I think about this whole thing with somebody who's really kind of like living and acting and experiencing and putting out trauma all the time, they're like at 100 miles an hour, right? So back in the 70s, mm-hmm. I'm dating myself. They had a thing where like it was like the national maximum speed limit went to like 55, right? So then later into the 70s and the 80s, you would see these campaigns, 55, stay alive. So I need my relationship to be around 55, 65. Okay, because see, 100, 100.
I love.
Weird things are gonna get real wild and crazy. Okay, so I don't want to be at 100. So what I'm so if you're in that relationship and it seems a little bored, maybe you at 55, but maybe you need to kick it up just a little notch, 65, and that's okay too. Now you're 70. All right, now the police might be looking for you a little bit, but let's not get to 100 because 100 is where we start to experience that significant trauma, those reenactments, re-traumatization of ourselves and things like that. So for me, I just say 55, stay alive, and I am good with it. That is not boring. There is enough energy from both of us on each part to keep things moving and exciting. But if you are a 55 or a 65 person, that is okay. But, baby, 100 might get you messed up. So if we think about it in those terms, you know, let's just, I mean, it's funny if we're talking about it, but it's destigmatizing this. And again, mm-hmm. last thing, when I teach emotional intelligence, I talk about emotions are data. It's information from you to you. If you identify what the emotion is telling you, you will identify how to diffuse the problems behind it and start to work forward. And if you need to read a book, Pia Melody has a book called Love Addiction. Love Addiction was a book from back in the day. It is still relevant today. I know that Pia has a book. I got a book. We all got some books. But, baby, the real book with the answers is your book. So 55 Stay Alive.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love that. You said something real quick, and it just popped up. I was sharing this. Again, let me just highlight this. There's a lot of wealth of information on social media. You can be overwhelmed by it, or like we played the cut at the bottom of the hour where, like I said, the loudest in the room is not always got the, you know, the best information or whatever. So there are ways to, if you will, misuse social media. But if you're selective and not stuck on there all the time, you could find information that is very helpful. And I remember I found this cut this week, just real quick, talking about being able to diffuse situations. And it was, I think it was, I can't think of the guy's name now, Simon Samanek or whatever. He was highlighting, I think he's a psychologist or whatever. I play a lot of cuts on the show with him. But he was just highlighting that even in diffusing a situation, you want to meet emotion with emotion and rationale with rationale. And quite often, we, in our attempt to help each other, the men and women are in a different place with that, and so it exasperates the situation. And what he was specifically talking about was, if you will, delivering a truth almost at the right time or when it can be received. And so I'm just highlighting that when you, in a sense, get healthy, you both get better at, is this the time to have this conversation? Because you're not going to avoid the conversation like you might in dramatic situations. Quite often that happens.
Absolutely.
And it blows up later. But you get better in communicating at, is this the right time? If, you know, if your lady's emotional, or men typically have the tendency to want to fix the situation when it's being brought to them, not understanding she just needs to vent it right now. So let that happen. Stay in that emotion. Mm-hmm. Then revisit if there needs to be a solution. In some cases, it won't even need to be one. But again, these are just, again, just a beautiful dialogue today. Father, if you will, you can, if you want to, give a closing thought, but more importantly, let people know how they can stay in contact with you, because ultimately, dialogue and connect is what we do best. We're not here just for the dialogue. We want to connect you to real life resources. My community knows I'm pretty good at vetting who I bring to the community. And so I would highly recommend not only that people follow you, but for someone who may want to get help with you, please share how they can do that as well.
Absolutely. So I would love for your audience to connect with me on Instagram or TikTok at SheIsPhila. And everything is at the link in my bios there to work with me to gain more insight. There are tons of free videos and resources there as well. And my parting thought would just simply be for us to all be more gentle with ourselves. Give ourselves more grace as we go through this process of life, of love, of relating to one another. And as we become more able to be gentle with ourselves, we'll be able to have more empathy and more compassion for others. But it starts with how you treat yourself and how you relate to yourself. So give yourself a little more grace. be more gentle with yourself and pace yourself through this process of life because it's not supposed to be easy. And again, you can find me on Instagram and TikTok at SheIsPhyla. Thank you so much, Montoya. I absolutely love this conversation.
No, absolutely. Alisa, if anybody out there, if your mate's saying you need to get more in tune with your emotions, and that can be the man or the woman, especially in today's time, with this Black American experience, if you will, if you're hearing that, Alisa, how are you helping people? You got less than a minute, so get it out, how they can contact you and what resources you offer as well before we close the show.
Absolutely. So I offer emotional intelligence coaching as well as some assessments to kind of help you see where you're experiencing things and even how your brain likes to do things, right? So you can reach me on Instagram and pretty much every platform at I am Ms. MZ Word. And my last quote for the day is, trauma impacts us all, but it doesn't have to drive us to a destination we don't want to be in.
Now, I love it. If you're in Atlanta, the Mental Dialogue Live experience is October 20th. Also, check us out on Monday for Making Money Matter Monday. See y'all next Saturday. All I ask is that you think.